Ebibi kwa mu do fochi enyiresi eku abagntana so tra no tofo france kwati awayira belgium wurasi agbo no so mepotoki fu apiringiringiri osaje fo kwa amatu ab mabranze madu katabire ati kwa asiri bere ma uhu dom sero osaje fo dom be hu asiri ohene kasa kasa kasa
we are going to demonstrate to the world, to the other nations, young as we are, that we are prepared to lay our own foundation. As I said in the assembly just minutes ago, I made a point that we are going to see that we create our own African personality and identity. It is the only way in which we can show the world that we are ready for our own battle.
But today, may I call upon you all that at this great day, let us all remember that nothing in the world can be done unless it had the positive support of God. We have done the battle, and we again rededicate ourselves not only in the struggle to emancipate other territories in Africa. Our independence is meaningless unless it is linked up with the total liberation of the African continent. Let us now, fellow Ghanaians, let us now ask for God's blessing. And for only 2 seconds, in your thousands and millions, I want to ask you to pause only for 1 minute and give thanks to Almighty God for having led us through obstacles, difficulties, imprisonments, hardship and suffering to have brought us to the end of our trouble today. 1 minute silence. Good. Ghana is free forever. Ago! Asama make me get up when you want to make it. Makade, you pass from wife to Mako. And you hang on Yamanatum, Yanum Kobio. And you know, you get to know by the very young visitor by men by you. Actually, I know the way. And when Nara, we've been passing. English, when you're sure by sending Nara, and then you grab a bit. No, my mamma, Monsieur, men, you know, Winara, now, Mr. Winara, now, ex service men, and Winara, now, Mr. One, no man, senior ye. Now, a little English. I want simply to thank those who have come from abroad to witness this occasion. Here, I wish I could quote Marcus Garvey. Once upon a time, he said that he looked throughout the whole world to see if he could find a government of the black people. He looked around, didn't find one. And he said he was going to create one. Marcus Garvey did not succeed. But here today, the words of Toussaint, the words of Marcus Garvey, the words of Agri, the words of Christian Hipport, the words of our lesser spirit who have gone behind us has come to reality at this present moment.
No mauro queviu, a no mauro queviu. Congo mancará, lumumba demirifa. Nia wokuma quarabam montia, nakakabua, odia tu. A no ma quarabresia mutia nizema bujabum, lumumba demirifa. O sia do your berima demirifa.
Countrymen, African freedom fighters. Comrades and friends, somewhere in Katanga, in the Congo, where and when, we do not know, three of our brother freedom fighters have been done to death. There have been killed Patrice Lumumba, the Prime Minister of the Republic of the Congo, Maurice Nkolo, the minister in his government, who was elected from Katanga province, and Joseph Okito, the vice president of the Congolese Senate. About their end, many things are uncertain, but one fact is crystal clear. They have been killed because the United Nations, whom Patrice Lumumba himself as Prime Minister, had invited to the Congo to preserve law and order, not only failed to maintain that law and order, but also denied to the lawful government of the Congo all other means of self-protection. History records many occasions when rulers of states have been assassinated. The murder of Patrice Lumumba and of his two colleagues, however, is unique in that this is the first time in history that the legal ruler of a country has been done to death with the open connivance of a world organization in whom that ruler put his trust. These are the facts. Patrice Lumumba was appointed Prime Minister by the departing Belgian authorities because he was the leader of the parliamentary party with the largest representation and was the only member of parliament who could obtain a majority in both the Senate and the Chamber. Kasavubu was subsequently elected as the ceremonial head of the state, but it was clearly agreed and understood that he should have no more authority or power than has the King of the Belgians in Belgium. This fact, clearly written into the Constitution of the Congo, has been deliberately ignored and distorted by those who have sought for their own ends to give some appearance of legality to the military usurpers and the agents of colonial rule who have illegally seized power in some parts of the Congo. Shortly after independence, the Congolese army mutinied. Patrice Lumumba and his colleagues had to secure outside support from somewhere if they were to preserve the legal structure of the state. In the interest of world peace, and in order to prevent the Cold War being brought into Africa, Patrice Lumumba invited the United Nations to preserve law and order. The United Nations insisted that they should have the sole mandate to do this, and that the legal government of the Congo should not obtain that military assistance which would have otherwise been forthcoming from many other friendly African states. However, instead of preserving law and order, the United Nations declared itself neutral between law and disorder and refused to lend any assistance whatsoever to the legal government in suppressing the mutineers who had set themselves up in power in Katanga and South Kasai. When, in order to move its troops against the rebels, the government of the Congo obtained some civilian aircraft and civilian motor vehicles from the Soviet Union, the colonialist powers at the United Nations raised a howl of rage, while at the same time maintaining a discreet silence over the build-up of Belgian arms and actual Belgian military forces in the service of the rebels. With a total disregard of the Constitution, which expressly provided that the President could not dismiss the Prime Minister unless there had been a vote of no confidence in the Parliament, Kasavubu illegally tried to remove Patrice Lumumba from office and to substitute another government. When Lumumba wished to broadcast to the people, explaining what had happened, the United Nations, in the so-called interest of law and order, prevented him by force from speaking. They did not, however, use the same force to prevent the mutineers of the Congolese army from seizing power in Leopoldville and installing a completely illegal government. Despite the fact that one of the most important reasons for the United Nations action was supposedly to see that all Belgian forces were removed, the United Nations sat by while the so-called Katanga government, which is entirely Belgian-controlled, imported aircraft and arms from Belgium and from other countries, such as South Africa, which have a vested interest in the suppression of African freedom. The United Nations connived at the setting up, in fact, of an independent Katanga state, though this is contrary to the Security Council's own resolutions. finalists, the United Nations, which could exert its authority to prevent Patrice Lumumba from broadcasting, was, so it pleaded, quite unable to prevent his arrest by mutineers or his transfer through the use of airfields under United Nations control into the hands of the Belgian-dominated government of Katanga. The United Nations is, on behalf of all its members, in control of the finances of the Congo. It is now 2 months ago since I personally wrote to Mr. Hammerschult to ask him where the money came from which is being used to pay the soldiers in Mobutu's illegal army. I am still awaiting an answer. One thing is certain, however, this money does not come from the revenue of the Congo. It is supplied from outside by those who wish to restore colonialism in practice by maintaining in office a puppet regime entirely financially dependent upon them. The time has come to speak plainly. The danger in the Congo is not so much the possibility of a civil war between Africans, but rather a colonialist war in which the colonial and imperialist powers hide behind African puppet regimes. At this very moment, northern Katanga is being laid waste by military units under command of a regular officer of the Belgian army, Colonel Crevecoeur, and with the most modern weapons supplied by Belgium. Recruiting offices have been opened in South Africa, in France, and elsewhere, and wages of over £400 a month are being offered to former German fascist officers and to former collaborators of Hitler and Mussolini in other countries in order to persuade them to enlist in an unholy war against the African people. Where, I ask again, does the money come from to pay these big salaries and to buy all of this modern and expensive armament which is now being deployed against unarmed peasants and villages? The rulers of the United States, of the United Kingdom, of France, and of the other powers who are militarily allied with Belgium must answer these questions. Why did they express so loudly their indignation when the Soviet Union placed at the disposal of the legal government of the Congo civilian aircraft and civilian vehicles? Why are they so silent when their ally, Belgium, openly supplies military aircraft and armored vehicles to the rebels? Why is it that no single member of the North Atlantic Treaty Organization has on any occasion addressed to Belgium any public rebuke for the flagrant breaches of the Security Council resolutions in which Belgium is every day indulging? Alas, the architects of this murder are many. In Ghana, we realize the great financial stakes which some great powers have in the Union Minière and in other industrial and commercial undertakings in the Congo. I would, however, ask these powers these questions. Do they really believe that ultimately they can safeguard their investments and their interests in the Congo by conniving at a brutal and savage colonialist war? Do they realize that they are sacrificing African lives to continue in Africa the Cold War at the very time when all powers, both great and small, should be concentrating on the abolition of colonialism and the establishment of world peace? Patrice Lumumba, Maurice Impolo, and Joseph Okito have died because they put their faith in the United Nations and because they refused to allow themselves to be used as stooges or puppets for external interests.